Homesteading. It's not just having a lot of property and building a farm. It's a mindset. And today, I'm going to walk you through homesteading where you are.
Hi, and welcome to the Urban Homesteader Podcast, where I'm your host, Samantha McClure. On this podcast, I will share my family's adventures on our one-acre homestead in the middle of small-town USA, from homeschooling and cooking to animals and everything in between.
So, homesteading where you're at. First question is, what is homesteading? Homesteading is a mindset. It's a frame of mind. It's a thought process where a person or persons decide they want a simpler life, a more self-sufficient, self-reliant life. You don't have to have these huge properties with the big farmhouse and lots of space, when really you can homestead right where you're at, whether you're in an apartment or you have 5 acres to spare. It's really what you choose to do with what you have. So you don't really have to wait for the perfect time to homestead. You can go ahead and start there. And it's really not as hard as people make it out to be. And it's easy to get started in. In fact, over the past year, as the coronavirus or COVID-19 has made circles around the world, shutting the world economy down, people have been home, more and more people have started embracing these homestead ideologies, these homestead values. And it was really as simple as, starting in the kitchen. For instance, do you remember back when the shutdowns first started happening? We couldn't get flour, we couldn't find yeast, canning supplies went really hard to find. It's because people all over were embracing this ability to stay home and embracing these, where's my food coming from tendencies. So people were learning to bake bread, and they were learning how to can, and they were learning how to garden. I know several of my friends who live in homeowners associations. So, homesteading is a little harder in homeowners associations just from the huge rules. My friend up in North Carolina was sending me pictures this year. She planted her first garden. She grew peppers and tomatoes, and she was really, really proud of these and really excited. And I'm really excited for her. She made butter for the first time. It was really easy, and she said it was absolutely delicious, and it was a lot of fun. I've been watching her over the past 9 months as, she's been home. She has embraced this homesteading lifestyle a little bit more, and she's putting things on her family's table that she's made with her own hands. They're better for them. They taste better, and she has that sense of satisfaction that she did that, and I'm really excited that more and more people are embracing this mindset. So when you start homesteading, and I've been asked, where do you begin? What's the first thing that you would want to start with? And I always like to say food. Food is quite literally the center of homesteading, honestly, if you think about it. Everything we do when we homestead generally revolves around what we're putting in our bellies, what we're feeding our families, what we're providing to our animals. Because the basic question is, where's it from? Who grew it? And what's in it? And as homesteaders, we want the good stuff. We want it to be good for us. We want it to be good for our family. And we want to know that it's good for the economy. So first thing you do, easiest first step into homesteading, is take a family favorite. Say it's mac and cheese. Take that mac and cheese that you normally buy from the box, and get on Pinterest and look for a macaroni and cheese recipe. Make that from scratch. Or bake a loaf of bread, that sandwich bread you want. There are thousands of recipes online, and I'll share one here in my blog, on my website, so that you can make some yourself, because there's honestly one of my favorite joys in life is when I have a fresh loaf of bread come out of the oven. I take off that first, I don't know, inch to half inch end, slather it in butter while it's still almost too hot to touch, and that is quite literally one of my favorite things on the planet to eat. I'm really not a huge bread person, but that first slice just, it does it for me. It's awesome. It's so good. But, you know, start in your kitchen. Start with scratch baking. You may start with something simple like macaroni and cheese and bread. And then later you move on to more difficult things such as canning your own jam. Or, I don't know, maybe you've always wanted to learn how to make a souffle or creme brulee, which, by the way, is not as hard as it sounds. And it's super delicious, and there's less sugar in it than the custard pie that my husband really likes. So I'm just saying. And then, you know, once you've mastered, you know, cooking from scratch and getting your family used to eating from scratch, then it's a little bit easier to move into the next steps. Now, I'm not saying you need to go out, you know, go through your pantry and get rid of all the processed stuff. You do that and that's what your family's used to eating, there's going to be a revolt. So slowly, you know, replace that processed and prepackaged stuff with more wholesome and homemade. It's kind of a slow process. And trust me, I know this from experience because I still deal with it sometimes when I'm trying to replace things in our diet. And it's not stuff that my family grew up with, or specifically my husband grew up with. So, you know, baby steps. The next thing you might want to get into after you've mastered cooking from scratch is replacing where you buy your groceries. I know it's really easy just to run to the grocery store. Prices are fairly consistent. Quality is fairly consistent. But let me tell you, you start buying locally sourced items, meat and vegetables, herbs, that kind of stuff, and two things happen. One, the food is better for you because the longer produce sits on a truck or in a warehouse, the less nutritional value it has. It's part of the decaying process. It loses its nutritional value. Whereas if you buy straight from the farmer, then you're getting probably picked that morning freshness. You know where it's from. All you have to do, and if you don't, you mean just ask the farmer, hey, where's your farm? You can ask about their growing practices and find out if it's, you know, conventionally grown or if it's organically grown or naturally grown. Just a heads up, organically grown, they may not have it labeled as organic because that just goes through a lot of, it's really expensive to get something labeled organic. It's crazy how hard it is to do that. But if you sit there and you go to the farmer's market and you talk to the farmer and say, hey, where's your farm located? How do you grow things? What kind of growing process do you use? They'll sit down and chat with you. They love to, you know, talk to people and explain their farm, because if you can build a relationship with the farmer, you'll have a better understanding of where your food comes from and what's in it and whether or not it's got chemicals. And that to me is kind of important. I want to know where my food's coming from. I want to know how it's grown. And so that's the first benefit of, you know, shopping local. The second benefit of shopping local and knowing where your food is coming from is the money that you spend on your groceries isn't going to some middleman who brokers the cheapest possible deal for the farmer to get produce to you. Instead, the money is going straight into your farmer's pocket, and then that farmer is going back and spending it in the local economy as well. So your money stays right there. It's not going to some CEO in Little Rock if you're buying in Edgefield. It's not going to, you know, overseas imports like China or Pakistan. It's staying right here in your local community because you're supporting, you know, small. I'm a huge proponent. I'm a huge supporter of small business. That's something that I try very hard to keep in my budget. I know that with small businesses, I generally pay a little bit more than I would if I were to go to the big box stores like Walmart and Sam's Club and Costco and, you know, the local grocery store. I get that. I know I'll save money if I go there. But even our biggest businesses at one point were small businesses. So I don't know if you're aware, but small business is kind of the backbone of America. They are what built America. The hard-working people with an American dream, with, you know, that good old-fashioned American dream. And that's the small business. So if we're out here supporting small businesses, we're supporting people like me and you that have kids they want to put in soccer. So instead of paying a CEO at Walmart for a few extra cents off of a tomato, we're paying a farmer who that few extra cents can be put towards putting their kid in soccer or putting their kid in dance or paying for that vacation that they want to go on. So by shopping local, not only am I feeding my family better, but I'm helping take care of my local economy and people who are just like me, trying to make a living and trying to get by. So, you know, shop local if you can. You will pay a little bit more, but the quality is usually better. And in fact, it's more often than not better than what you would get at the grocery store. And the nutritional value and the peace of mind that comes with it is, it's great. Now, after you've, you know, mastered the shop local, maybe you want to branch out a little bit more and you want to start looking into growing your own food. Granted, some places you don't have property to do it, but you might have a sunny window or you have a back porch that you can put a couple pots on. So start small, start simple. For instance, grow herbs in your windowsill. If you live in an apartment on the 15th floor in Manhattan, get a flower pot, stick it in a sunny windowsill, and plant your herbs. Having the fresh herbs to cook with will, of course, make your house smell good because as you're cutting them, they release their oils into the air and it just smells heavenly. You should smell my garden. Or when we're mowing the grass and the mint that I, you know, was told not to plant in the ground and took over, cut the grass, the whole yard smells like peppermint. I mean, can't go wrong there. Well, just a heads up, if you plant mint in the ground, be prepared, it does take over. I know this from personal experience because I have mint, lemon balm, chocolate mint, peppermint, and a million other mints loose, and, well, at least it smells good when we cut the grass. If you've got a back porch and you've got room for a couple of flower pots, plant some tomatoes, plant some peppers, plant a bush of green beans. It's really not hard. Start with one or two varieties, and then the next year expand to another one or two. And I'll tell you, a lot of people, a lot of magazines will tell you that carrots are really easy beginner vegetables. Let me tell you, that's not necessarily true. I've been growing vegetables going on, I don't know, 8 years, and I still have yet to master the carrot. I do everything I'm supposed to. I give it nice deep soil. I give it nice rich soil. And I still end up with little tiny twigs. They taste good. They're super sweet. But they're like Barbie carrots. They're not a whole lot of carrot there. But lettuce is fairly easy. You can grow that in the winter. Or fall. I would do fall and early spring. Winter, it doesn't care for the frost too much. And it really doesn't like the heat. It bolts quickly. So you could grow that in a cold frame. Or, you know. Have you ever seen those big animal cracker buckets that you get at, like, Walmart or Sam's Club? I have found those make great tiny greenhouses. I know it's crazy. You can get a small pot and you can plant your lettuce in it. And then turn that upside down. You might cut out, you know, if you need to, cut the lip off, but stick that over your plant and it creates this bubble of warm air. It's really cool. You can go through my Facebook account and see some of the other makeshift greenhouses that I've done over the years to kind of extend my harvest a little bit. But as I was saying, you know, start with one or two vegetables or fruits and then slowly expand each year, adding more and more to your garden or to your pots or to your windowsill, and or change it up every year. And one bit of advice that I would share, though, is if you're going to grow something, I know these seed catalogs, trust me, I fall for it too, have the most wonderful looking fruits and vegetables and herbs and stuff. But if it's not something your family would eat, I wouldn't plant it. There's nothing quite like wasting this precious garden space, especially if you have very little, on something that's just going to sit there and not get eaten. Like, for instance, eggplant. My husband is the only one that likes eggplant in my house. So I might plant one plant, but I'm not going to plant an entire row of it. Or a couple years ago, I planted cauliflower. I thought, everybody grows cauliflower, I should grow cauliflower. We don't eat cauliflower. I don't like the texture, my kids don't like the texture, my husband can't stand it either. So here I had a bunch of cauliflower and it got wasted. We don't eat it. So grow what you'll eat. There are lots of varieties of things in your categories, like tomatoes. We love tomatoes at my house, or at least the kids and I do. My kids eat tomatoes like they're candy. You would think it was an apple some days. They just, hey, mom, can I have a tomato? Sure, have a tomato. I never say no to fruits and vegetables to my kids. Sometimes their requests are kind of odd, but I never say no to fruits and vegetables. They can have all they want unless I have it pegged for a meal or something. But tomatoes, y'all, there are literally hundreds of varieties of tomatoes to try. Some are better than others. Some are downright unusual. Like, there's one that I saw in the Baker Creek catalog called, I can't pronounce it. Anyway, it's called the Walking Tomato or the Traveler Tomato. And it's this warty conglomerate thing. It looks like a bunch of baby tomatoes kind of grew together to form this weird thing. Anyway, that tomato is perfect for when you're hiking or walking. You can just break off a piece at a time and snack on it without making a huge mess, which is really cool. My kids really want to try it. I haven't ordered the seeds yet. I'm getting ready to. But, you know, there's so many tomatoes. You got blue tomatoes. You got yellow tomatoes. You got green tomatoes and purple tomatoes and orange and red and paste tomatoes, sauce tomatoes, eaten tomatoes. So there's plenty of options for the things that you do eat that you don't have to give space to things that you won't eat. So grow what you'll eat. It's really easy. Now, once you've started growing your own crop, there will come a time when you have a harvest and you have more than you can eat right away. Y'all, I loved the first time this happened. Oh, so exciting. So it's like, well, what do I do with all of this? Let me tell you, preserving your harvest and eating from it later on in the year is so wonderful. It feels so good to know that this chili that I made is made with the tomatoes I grew this summer. Oh my gosh, they taste better and there's that sense of satisfaction that comes with it. So you're going to want to preserve it. And there's several methods. I mean, you've got eating fresh, which isn't technically preserving because, well, you're eating it. You've got freezing. I do freeze things like my fruits. Generally, I freeze blueberries and strawberries and peaches because we eat those in muffins and stuff like that. But then you have other options like dehydrating, which I do for my herbs. And I dehydrate onions and I dehydrate peppers, things that I like to add to dips and stuff later. And then you have the option of canning. Now, there are two kinds of canning. You've got water bath canning, which is great for jams and jellies and pickles. And then you've got pressure canning, which is great for low pressure items like green beans and corn and soup and stuff like that. Now, I'm not going to go into detail on canning here just because it's a very extensive topic. So I will do a podcast later, and I'll also do a blog post. I'm working on a workshop to teach. So keep an eye out on my Facebook page for information on that. If you're local to me, I'm happy to teach you one-on-one. Generally involves, you know, we work together to can some things and you get to take home a couple. There is a small fee because, well, I got to pay for the supplies. But you go home and you're, you know, you've got a new skill. So preserving the harvest is a lot of fun. There's some other ways like curing and smoking for like home-raised meats or stuff like that. So like bacon and sausage, we can learn that. Now, maybe you've gotten through the gardening phase and you want to expand a little bit more. And that means adding livestock. So here's the thing about livestock owning, especially if you're in an urban setting like me. I can't raise pigs. Well, I mean, I can, there's a loophole, but let's just say I can't raise pigs. That's the one farm animal I was told I could not have in town. You need to research your city, or if you live in a homeowners association, research the rules so that you know what you can and cannot raise. For a very, very long time, you couldn't even raise chickens in town. Now, that rule is being repealed in a lot of places, so more and more people can raise chickens. Usually there's a set limit on how many you can have, but hey, the world is turning more homestead accepting. Now, if for whatever reason your HOA or your city say no farm animals, there are a couple of options, but I'm not telling you to do this. Full disclaimer, if you choose to do this, this is on you. This is not me telling you. I'm just sharing an idea and some alternatives that you might be able to get away with. I'm not saying do this, okay? Don't think I'm telling you to do this. This is just something to think about. Rabbits and quail. Rabbits and quail are smaller. They're quiet. So you could technically raise these and nobody would know you had them. Unless, of course, you have, you know, a nosy neighbor or whatnot. You can raise them in your garage or in a shed or in a corner of your backyard if you have a fenced yard where, you know, no nosy neighbors will see you, like the tall wooden fences. They don't make a lot of noise. They have a very small setup requirement. So you could grow a trio of rabbits or a hutch of quail in less than 10 feet of space. So it doesn't take a lot. And surprisingly, they're not that expensive to raise. Your meat to feed output is actually fairly good. Honestly, rabbits, aside from the initial setup and the purchase of the rabbits, are kind of almost free because if you feed them your scraps, like vegetable and fruit scraps, you can almost feed these animals for nothing. No additional costs because, well, you've already bought the stuff for yourself. This is just what's left over. And rabbits reproduce really, really quick. Quail, they reproduce fairly, I mean, they start producing eggs fairly quick. And if you get the quail, I would research them first because some quail will handle your weather better than others. I found that Cortunix quail, they're a larger bird, did really well in my climate. So, you know, that's an idea. Just make sure you do your research before you get any animal. Make sure you know their space requirements, their care needs, whether or not they would do well in your area. And definitely make sure, you know, the rules in your area for owning livestock. I don't want you to get in trouble, but there are some options if you, you know, keep it quiet. So wherever you're homesteading, wherever you are on your homesteading journey, I hope the simple joys of this lifestyle and bring you comfort, and they, you know, you enjoy it. It'll be a little bit of work, but in the end, it's worth it. It doesn't take a lot of property. It doesn't take a fancy house. It's just a change in your mindset, a change to do better, to grow better, and eat better. And if the pandemic taught us anything, it is when the world has gone crazy, there's a deep desire to return to our roots and live a more wholesome lifestyle. So until next time, happy homesteading. I hope y'all have a fantastic new year.